everyone, and welcome to Q&A. I'm Jay Nordlinger, and this podcast is brought to you by Quip, the electric toothbrush. I'll have more to say about this fine product later in the show. I'm a user myself. But if you'd like to get a head start into savings, go to getquip.com/QA. Our guest today is Jim Harbaugh, the quarterback and coach. He's the coach of the University of Michigan football team. He played for that team, too. He was our QB in the mid-1980s. And he went to the NFL, where he played for almost 15 seasons, mainly with the Bears and the Colts. He then coached the University of San Diego, Stanford, and the San Francisco 49ers before returning to Michigan. I've known him and loved him since about 1975. We grew up together. Best athlete I ever saw, and of course, a big-time coach. Jim, good morning. Hello.
Jay, how you doing?
Doing good. Spending a lot of time at home, strangely enough. You too?
Same here. Yep.
You going a little stir-crazy, or have you developed a routine, or?
Yeah, no, I'm working. Doing the virtual. God has virtually stopped the world from spinning, but doing things from home, calls, like I see a lot of people doing, and also just things with my kids. You know, coaching, there's so many hours a day that you work, and it's pretty much 365 days a year. So I'm trying to make memories with my kids. We're picking a different thing to do every day, things that we haven't ever done, but just bird watching, going to YouTube and finding out how to do that, learn how to play dominoes, jigsaw puzzle, lots of sports. We're doing field hockey and we're doing soccer and basketball and football and baseball. Chopping wood, doing some jobs around the house, like dishwashing and some blue jobs, you know, chopping wood as well, cutting grass, just trying to do things with my wife and kids. And so I can look back and say, this was the time we got to spend a whole month together and, made memories.
Are you playing a little catch, Jim?
Playing a lot of catch.
How's your arm? How's your arm, babe? Still got it?
Yeah, never really lost it.
It's
still there. You had a good. How about you? You had the lefty fireballing coming from the left side, southpaw.
Hadn't been tested in a while, Jim. Hadn't been tested.
When's the last time you went out and had a catch?
When's the last time we did it? That may be it, but I like to think it's riding a bike. You know, I think it's still there. And how about your jump shot? You got a hoop at home?
We got a hoop. Definitely. It's my daughter plays basketball. So does my son. But every day we're out there shooting hoops. That's a therapeutic thing. That is, get the ball in your hand and shoot the jumper. So trying to get more arc on it, but the range isn't quite there like it used to be.
Coach, I was telling you a few days ago that we don't have sports to watch now on TV, and people are running these classic games. And I guess they're pretty popular. Mm-hmm. I myself am not real interested in watching games of the past, even great ones where you know the outcome and so on. How do you feel about it?
I like watching. I watch football games, and you can watch a game pretty quick. I mean, some of these like on YouTube condense down to like a half hour, just the actual plays. Mm-hmm. My son Jack, I mean, he lives for that. Half the day he spends watching games, so I've kind of gotten into that with him.
Right.
Golf too. You know, you can watch a. Golf, I mean, I've flipped through the channels and seen some of the golf tournaments like 2015 or 14 or whatever. And it's like, doesn't seem like it's, you got to go look up. Are they still playing golf? It seems pretty real.
you probably didn't have the time to watch those tournaments when they happened. You were probably working.
Yeah, I would always like the majors. I always tape those, and Masters usually watch that one. You know, Thursday night, get the recap and buzz through the TiVo, and
exactly.
Same on Friday or Saturday, and then Sunday. Usually home on Sunday. That's sometimes in spring practice too. So, but I always tape that one. I tape the U.S. Open and the PGA Championship and the British Open, and watch the replay at night.
I hope the majors are somehow played this year, even if it's in the fall, even if it's, you know, in consecutive weeks or something. I think you can forget the rest of the golf schedule, but somehow I think the 2020 majors need to be played. For one thing, I'm sort of interested in what Tiger can do. I mean, you know, clock is ticking a bit.
Yeah, everybody is. I mean, everybody loves. That's a great idea. I hope they do that. It's interesting. You get the different opinions on what's going to happen with the different sports. But yeah, that would be terrific. You know, maybe they play the majors, you know, back to back, consecutive, 8 weeks or something like that. Maybe with a tournament in between.
Hopefully.
It's good to hope.
We can hope, right? Pardon?
It's good to hope, right? That's not.
That's what we got.
Yeah.
In your mind, do you expect the football season to begin in September or late August, or are you not thinking in those terms?
Same thing. Hope. Hope I'm going to prepare. Not going to give it one thought that it's not going to happen, because you know, it's like being a backup quarterback. I learned this, that it's better to be prepared and not have the opportunity than to not prepare. And then your chance comes and your opportunity comes and you're not prepared to do it.
Isn't that
so
true?
You got to not one thought that it won't happen.
Jim, you remind me of the old line that the backup quarterback is often the most popular guy in town, you know, because people say, oh, the starting quarterback, Smith, he's no good. Put Jones in. You know, Jones is on the bench. He's just great. And I just think it's human nature in the fans.
There's no doubt. Yeah. Yeah, that's a thing. Well, you see, everybody's got an opinion, right? I mean, there's 1,000 of those.
Yeah, Birgit Nielsen, the soprano, said she never had such good reviews as when she retired. They gave her help while she was singing, and then when she retired, oh, she was great and all this stuff. Jim, speaking of sopranos, and this is a really jarring change of subject, but you're a fan of the TV show The Sopranos, aren't you?
I mean, that's one of the all-time best shows. My favorite show of all time is The Rockford Files.
Oh, James Garner.
James Garner, no doubt about it.
That's
Jim Rockford's favorite character ever. But I'm pretty sure that many of the writers for the Rockford Files were the ones that did the Sopranos as well.
Great theme song, by the way, the Rockford Files. It comes right to mind.
Got it.
Jim, I have a question for you that goes way back. Did you always figure you would play in the NFL? I mean, was it something that you sort of planned for and figured would come to pass?
No, not until my senior year in college. And then I ended up playing a fifth year too. But about my senior year, when my senior year was over, you know, first real season as a starter, because I got hurt my junior year. But not until then. I mean, as growing up as a kid, I was just hoping to be a high school player and hoping to be good enough to be a college player. I mean, that was my
You're
goal.
You're kidding. Yeah. You're kidding. You were a shoe-in. You were a sure thing. At least in my mind.
No.
My mind.
Well, you know, my dad was, you know, my dad, Jack, coached at Michigan when I was a kid, and I used to always go to the practices and be around the team, and those guys were just so big and so, like, I mean, larger than life.
Yeah.
And when you're 10 through about, you know, 14, 9 through 14, you hope, but you're like, oh, I'll never be that big or that good. Or I pray to God that I can grow to 6'3", and hopefully if I drink enough milk, that builds strong bones. Hopefully yeah. I'll get there. But gosh, I'm fighting my grandfather, Joseph Sapides from Sicily, is, you know, short. He's five six, and no Harbaugh had ever grown past 6 feet. So, but with prayer and a lot of milk, I was able to get to 6'3", but I didn't know that when I was a young kid. But, you know, finally, always, you know, just keep working and trying to get better every day. You know, that was my philosophy. If I could be better today than I was yesterday and be better tomorrow than I am today, then maybe I got a shot.
By the way, Jim, I'll tell you something funny. 5'6" in Sicily is pretty good. you might play hoops there.
Let me tell you, there's no man alive that had a greater work ethic than my grandfather, Joseph Petey. And that's, we all learned our work ethic from Grandpa Joe. Grandpa Joe had a full-time job since he was 9 years old, lived to 98 and a half years old. And I mean, we could truly admire Joseph Petey.
Did they live in Ohio?
Yeah, my mom's from Cleveland. So, yeah. You know, the Sapides were from Cleveland, Ohio. My mom, they grew up on the east side of Cleveland. My dad's from a little town called Crestline, Ohio, which is near Mansfield, Bucyrus, about halfway between Columbus and Cleveland. So they both met at BG, Bowling Green State University. My dad was a football player. My mom was a cheerleader. There's this great picture. Before my mom and dad even knew each other, that my dad has in the basement. And he's sitting on the bench, we're at number 13, and right behind him is my mom cheering in the cheerleader outfit. And yeah, Jack and Jackie Harbaugh. Doesn't get any better than that.
Jack and Jackie like the Kennedys, exactly. Yeah. By the way, yeah, I remember your grandparents.
I think they're coming up on 59 years of marriage coming up this November.
They'll always be glamorous to me.
Me too. I mean, just everything about them, every story. You know where they went on their honeymoon?
Where?
Mackinac. Cleveland Browns football game. Cleveland Browns football game. My dad was a high school coach at Camp McKinley, Ohio. He was a freshman coach. And the Browns were offering free tickets to a late November game. They were married on November 25th, I believe, is their anniversary. And so they went to a Browns game. How about that?
That's very Harbaugh. A very Harbaugh thing to do. Jim, when you – and the University of Michigan was big-time college ball. You know, this wasn't JUCO. But when you got to the pros, when you arrived in Chicago, did you think, damn, these guys are really good? I mean, the good college players are very good. But this is a whole different league in more sense than one. Are pro players, basketball people tell me, Jay, you can't fathom the difference between college ball and the NBA. It's just, they're just different planets. I suspect the same is true in football.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. It's, but it was much like, I remember being in eighth grade. And Dave McCarney was the gym teacher at St. Francis when I was, I'd have been seventh grade. But he was also the head coach at St. Thomas Gabriel Richard High School. And he had me come up and, like, practice with the varsity team as a seventh or eighth grader. And it was, like, so far out of my league. I mean, I couldn't even, you know, barely take a snap and execute a play. And then going from high school to college was a totally different level. It was such a big jump. And then going from college to pro was another huge step and jump. And, you know, at each point, whether he's trying to make the high school varsity team or become a college player or pro player, I mean, the first thing was you know, you got to prove you belong. You got to convince yourself you belong, and then you got to convince everybody else that you belong. And then the next step is you try to separate yourself and, you know, become a starter and then see how far you can go. But when I went from college to pro, there's no question about it, man. Watching Jim McMahon throw the ball and his precision and timing.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, trying to hand off a ball to Walter Payton or hit him on a swing pass. And if it wasn't just perfect, you know, you come over and pull your shorts down. Just Mike Singletary, Dan Hampton, Steve McMichael, Willie Gault, these guys, you know, trying to not underthrow Willie Gault. It was a huge jump. I mean, those guys were.
Was really Gault, you know, really fast?
Really fast.
Yeah, the lightning fast. Yeah.
Lightning fast. And most all, you know, and they all were.
Not too many
incredible athletes.
Yeah.
Not too many what?
Not too many slow pokes in the NFL.
No, slow and.
Even the big guys now, Jim, right? Even the big guys, they're fast. And here's a little name dropping, Jim, by complete freak coincidence. I could explain why. But I was at a table one night with Jerry Jones at an event, and I talked with him a little bit and pumped his brain. And he said, I'd like to quote him exactly. I'm going to get it fairly right, but not perfectly right. He said something like this. When I took over the Cowboys in 1989, he said, I think there were five players in the league over 300 pounds. Now there are, and then he named some big number. And then he put his finger up and said, and they're fast. And so something's got to give when it comes to injuries and collisions. And it's strange, isn't it, Jim?
Well, I can vouch for that. I mean, when I got on the Bears in 1987, William Perry was one of the only 300 pounders in the NFL. And I remember so much drama because he weighed 325 pounds when he came to training camp, and there was, you know, back and forth. He's too heavy. We're not playing him. He's got a condition, and you know, he was the fridge, and he was this, you know, larger than life guy as well. But you know, everybody else was in the other linemen were in the 280s, 290s, you know, et cetera. And now, you know, there's so many high school players that are 280, 290, 300, 320, 340, in big, you know, but 6'7", 6'8", 6'6". And these guys are not chubby or, you know, overweight. They're chiseled out of stone, you know, and really fast. There's 300 pound guys that run 4.5s, and you know, it's so many. And I there's all the discussion about you know, what sport has the best athletes and that kind of thing. I mean, standing on a pro sideline, you know, these days you look out there and go, these are the best athletes in the world in any sport. And I've been up close to other sports, but the change of the direction, the speed, the strength, you know, just unbelievable.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we're going to talk quarterbacking and other matters. I'm Jay Nordlinger doing Q&A with Jim Harbaugh, the coach of the University of Michigan Wolverines. Back after this word from our sponsor.
Years ago, there was a famous ad. I'm not just the president of Hair Club for Men, I'm also a client. Well, I am not the president of Quip, would that I were, but I am a user, and a happy one. Quip is a best-selling electric toothbrush, and more. The company wants you to know that if you have good habits, you're in good shape. They go on to say that this means brushing for 2 minutes twice a day and flossing regularly, no matter what brand you use. Quip makes things simple with the electric toothbrush, refillable floss, and anti-cavity toothpaste. The electric brush has sensitive sonic vibrations with a built-in timer and 30-second pulses to guide a full and even clean. The Quip floss dispenser comes with pre-marked string to help you use just enough. Plus, Quip delivers fresh brush head, floss, and paste refills to your door every 3 months with free shipping, so your routine is always right. Join over 3 million healthy mouths and get Quip today, starting at $25. If you go to getquip.com/QA right now, you'll get your first refill free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/QA. GETQUIP.com/QA. Quip, the good habits company.
Welcome back, everyone, to Q&A. I'm Jay Nordlinger, talking with my old friend Jim Harbaugh from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and other places. He was a quarterback in the NFL. He's been a coach since at the college level and at the pro level and at the college level again. Jim, I want to tell you, I think my favorite story about quarterbacks, and by the way, I just want to say, you don't need to respond to this. When I saw you on television quarterbacking the NFL, I wasn't the least surprised. Maybe you were, but I wasn't the least surprised. But here's the story I love. So Jack Kemp was giving a speech on the House floor one day, and his family was watching in the gallery, including his little daughter. And some guy in back of the family harumped to his wife, you know, why is Kemp talking about economics? You know, he was a football player. And Kemp's little daughter turned around and said, my daddy was not a football player. He was a quarterback. This leads me to quote to you David French, my friend and colleague. I sometimes do a sports talk show with him and Vivek Dave and Sally Jenkins. And David was saying recently that in his opinion, the most important position in sports is quarterback, more than pitcher, more than point guard, et cetera. And then he goes on to explain why. I can't recite exactly what he said. But is that your view too? I mean, obviously we have a bias, but is quarterback the most important position in sports?
Well, first of all, I mean, isn't that great about daughters? I mean, they're they stick up for their dad. It's a beautiful thing. I've three daughters of my own, and I love them so much. It's incredible. To answer your question, I think so. From personal experience and watching a lot of football games, yes, the quarterback who touches the ball every play when their team has the ball, when they're on the offensive side, I think they have the greatest impact. I mean, they're handling the ball, they're throwing it, they're touching it. There's nothing more important in football than, you know, the ball. That's the game. So, and just from personal experience too, I mean, I didn't play other sports professionally, but played so many sports. Played basketball, wrestled,
ice hockey,
pretty much all of them, and basketball and baseball in high school. But as at quarterback, whether it was high school or college or pro, I totally felt responsible for the game. Every game. I mean, there was that weight of the team, the game, the season. You know, it's just always felt like it was on the quarterback's shoulders.
Jim, I have a funny question for you. Are there some people, even good athletes, baseball players, for example, who can't throw a spiral? I never quite learned it. And can anyone learn to throw a spiral? Or some people just, even if they have good arms in other areas, they just can't. Is there some trick to it?
Yeah, there's trick. Grip is the main thing. Gripping the ball, spreading out your fingers, index finger. It's near to the top of the ball. I never was the guy who put the finger on top of the point of the ball, but up there close to the top, and fingers spread, you know, as wide as you can, but not to where you're straining. And holding the ball in just the fingers, not the palm. You know, a lot of guys make a mistake of having any of the the ball touching the palm. It's like a throwing a palm ball in baseball. I mean, it's gonna slow it down. So, mm-hmm. and the grip where it's firm, you know, like holding a firm but not squeezing the air out of the ball. And then just it's how it comes off the fingers. Start by coming off the pinky finger first, and then the ring finger, then the index finger, middle finger, then the thumb, and then finally the index finger. The pointer finger is the last thing to touch the ball. And just the feeling of flicking a booger off the end of your index finger, that's the last final flick. So if you just, so you had a booger on the end of your finger, you're just going to try to flick it off. That would be the sensation, what it would feel like. And then, finishing with the thumb into the back pocket, if you're a right-handed quarterback, into the back left pocket of your pants or trousers. That's the feeling. I think anybody can do it and learn how to do it. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, somebody who was a great thrower of the football, who didn't play football and wasn't a quarterback, was that I've ever seen, is Martina Navratilova.
Oh my!
I went to a tennis tournament in Chicago when I was playing with the Bears and got to meet some of the tennis players. And she was down where the, behind where the like a hallway, throwing a ball, warming up for a tennis match. And I got into I played catch with her, and she could just throw the heck out of the ball.
Jeez.
So she was talking about that's much the same action as a tennis serve would be, that overhand tennis serve. I thought that was fascinating, right. But she was really good. A lot of baseball players too. Nolan Ryan used to warm up throwing a football.
I'll be darned. I bet he was good at it.
Probably a little bit like throwing a screwball.
Jim, I had thought to ask you, you've met so many people. I mean, you just mentioned Martina, so many people. Have you ever been starstruck, or is it just normal to meet these great athletes? Has there ever been anyone, meeting him made you say, holy moly, this is so-and-so, whoever it is?
Oh, like hundreds. I mean, probably even 1,000 of them where you meet them and you're just starstruck, like you don't know what to say. And then later go, why did I say that? And so many times.
I'm guessing, Joe Montana and John Elway, just to start. I'm sure you've known them for years.
All those quarterbacks, Peyton Manning, Dan Marino, Joe Montana, Brett Favre. I mean, all these, so many. I mean, we got to meet so many. But Pope Francis, number one, that would be number one in my
mama
life.
Wow.
James Garner, got to meet him several times, played golf with him, met presidents and their wives. First president I ever met was Gerald Ford. I was a 10-year-old and 10 or 12 when he came to Ann Arbor, and I was Bo Schembechler's caddy when they played golf at the Michigan Open when it was at the university course. And I got Bo and Gerald Ford played together. Met President Reagan about 3 times, and Nancy Reagan. Met George Bush, George H. Bush, and did a campaign thing. I remember being 1,000 point of light when I was in college. The Obamas, Barack Obama, President Obama, Michelle Obama, met them several times, and they make you feel really comfortable. They take all the, even though you are starstruck and you're sitting there and talking to them, they have a great way of making you feel comfortable. So many people, Bob Dole, I just talked to Bob Dole, Senator Dole, on the phone, yesterday. Been so lucky. Bill Walsh, Tom Brady, Al Davis, Judge Judy, James Earl Jones.
Oh my.
Willie Mays, my dad and I, Willie Mays lived really close to us in Atherton. And we've gone to his house and sat there, and my dad and Willie Mays telling stories, and Tiger Woods and Michael Jordan and Bill Murray.
Oh, wow.
Clint Eastwood, had dinner with Clint Eastwood.
Still, man.
Now you're talking about my brother, John.
Yeah.
Garth Brooks. Colin Powell, Owen Wilson, and Vince Vaughn. They were awesome guys. They're just like they are in the movies. Just like they are, and just funny, hilarious, great guys. Condoleezza Rice felt my vocabulary was just woeful. Yeah. She's great. Larry Bird and Jason Day and so many. Jason Sudeikis. Funny story about meeting Jason Sudeikis. And Kevin Costner, played golf with Kevin Costner when he was filming Field of Dreams.
Then he did, before or after, he did Tin Cup, a golf movie.
That was after, yeah. Bull Durham, I think, was right before.
Oh.
So that was out. He was a huge star, and we played golf with him in Galena, Illinois. Mm-hmm. Our training camp was in Platteville, Wisconsin. He was filming the movie in Iowa. Yeah, guys, I mean, Bill Belichick, Johnny Rutherford, somebody, Bobby Orr.
God. The great one.
Play golf with Lee Trevino.
No way.
Yeah. Arnold Palmer. Yeah, they used to have this senior NFL players and senior golf. Guys on the senior tour, where there was a called a Cadillac tournament in just outside of New York. That was really cool. John Madden. See, I was starstruck when I met Lamar Jackson. Incredible player.
Yeah. He's one of those all-around athlete types, it seems to me.
Lamar is, I mean, the like a video game, watching his elusiveness and throwing ability. And he's the slow motion stuff is, oh my gosh, how's that possible? A lot of cool people.
Jim, one of the
Supreme Court judges were really neat to meet. Have you met them? John Roberts and Elena Kagan? And
no, nope.
Clarence Thomas.
Terrific.
Big football fan, Clarence Thomas.
Oh, yeah? From Pinpoint, Georgia. What's he a fan of? Of Nebraska? Huh. That's interesting.
I'm pretty sure that's what he said. I'm pretty sure of that.
Maybe he was a Tom Osborne fan. A lot of people were. He later went to Congress, Tom Osborne, as I remember.
Yeah.
Jim, I have to tell you something. I doubt this is true of you, but I have only a vague memory of Tom Brady at Michigan. I mean, he didn't stand out all that much to me. And he's had this historic career. Can you talk about him a minute or explain his longevity? Or he's a rare creature, isn't he?
No doubt about that. I mean, he's the greatest of all time in football, and I think he's pretty much lapped the field, in my opinion. I've talked to a lot of people that knew him when he was here, and they won games when he started. He was in a quarterback competition. I think Drew Henson was a phenom quarterback who came in as a freshman, and Tom was an upperclassman, and they were splitting time. And but Tom won big games and was drafted in the sixth round. I mean, very famously, a late round pick that, became the greatest of all time.
Just amazing. And I guess he's going to go another 2 years, or that's the plan.
Yeah, he's such he's so high drive. I mean, he's such a tense competitor, and really has taken care of himself so well. I mean, through his dedication to training and nutrition, and you know, I had a chance to play catch with him one time before a Michigan game, and what I mean can really, I mean, the throw of football. I mean, it's a beautiful throwing motion. He's so many levers that are working, but yet it's a compact throwing motion. And you know, the ball, I remember just playing catch with him and thinking, this ball is like catching itself. I mean, it's coming in here, you know, on a string like a laser. But the way I was catching it, he would throw such a catchable ball, even though it was coming in and spinning and at high velocity. So
very interesting.
Huh. Yeah. I was fighting hard to get it, you know, get it back to him and you know, try to be respectable myself. But it was the thing. It's just the thing of beauty, you know. Probably why, like people, the comment that watched Ted Williams playing baseball back.
Yes, you know, yes, yes, a great motion.
Well, you're looking at the best of all time.
Coach, let's talk about coaching for a few minutes. I am one of my favorite coaches is Gene Cady, the legendary Purdue basketball coach.
I've heard you say that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was reading about him not very long ago, and he was a big football star. I think he was an All-American at Kansas. I think he was in the NFL for a while. And then he wanted to be a high school teacher and coach, and he went to some junior high, I think. And he had also played baseball, as I recall. And they already had a football coach. That was a specialty. They already had a baseball coach. They said, but basketball's open. Would you do that? And he sort of shrugged and said, sure. And then he had a career in coaching college basketball, but he's really a football player. In your view, can a coach, obviously with some limits, can a coach coach anything? Are there coaching skills that just transfer across sports? I mean, I can see you courtside in basketball. I can see you in the dugout as a manager.
Yeah. And it's been done. You know, I mean, I've seen my dad coach baseball, seen him coach basketball. And, you know, many coaches used to do that. You know, there's great coaches that do both, you know, high school basketball and high school football. I've seen that. I mean, that to me would be like, that'd be the coolest job ever, you know, be able to do both of those as a coach, or, you know, manage baseball. I mean, that'd be really good. But coaching is teaching, you know, it's synonymous with teaching. Mm-hmm. You know, there's definitely a level of being able to be a good teacher. If you can do that, then you have to have studied the game, and in football it'd be, you know, knowing the X's and O's, and same in baseball. But I think it, I don't have to think. I know it's been done by many great coaches.
I as you know, I'm the son of an athletic director. You know, go ahead, Jim.
I know.
Yeah.
I was just thinking of some, I think I remember Vince Lombardi coached basketball, didn't he?
I don't know.
One time, I think I can remember a picture of him with a basketball under his arm. Don Brown, our defensive coordinator at Michigan, one of the best coaches I've ever been around. When he was coaching at Yale, they had lost their baseball coach, and Don became the baseball coach at Yale. Mm-hmm. And for the first time ever, took the baseball team in the first year he was coaching at Yale to the NCAA playoffs as a baseball coach.
Your friend George H.W. Bush played baseball at Yale.
First baseman, right?
First base, because he was left-handed. Exactly. You're right.
First sacker. So, but talk about your dad. This is one of the greats, one of the all-time great wrestling coaches and athletic directors and
yes, indeed.
And youth baseball coach for us.
Mm-hmm.
He was always expert at keeping this at the scorebook. That's where I learned how to keep score in a baseball game, was sitting next to your dad and, what are you doing there? I had the book out and
he's meticulous. Yes.
Meticulous. I mean, it was an art form, the way he would score a baseball game. And that's a lost art too. We could have a conversation about that. The lost art of people keeping score at a baseball game.
Well, one of the things he says is that, I know you've heard this, it's a common saying. You can't fire the team, so you fire the coach. And I follow sports, obsessed with it to a degree, but I'm no professional. But it seems to me that coaches are given too much credit and assigned too much blame. And I never quite know how to judge coaching, because I know for sure that the coach of the losing team might have done a better job than the coach of the winning team. The final score is not, you know, maybe the winning coach has better horses. What can you do? And so people say Phil Jackson and who's the other one? Pat Riley. They won so many championships. Well, it was their personnel. Well, but I'm sure they had something to do with it too, you know? So I find coaching a very hard thing to assess, because I know that the answer doesn't necessarily lie in the win-loss stat. Could you comment on this, Hella, because you're in it? And also you have the perspective of both a player for many years and a coach. So you've seen it from those sides.
Yeah, I mean, I think coaches that win, I mean, that's a pretty good measure. How good a coach somebody is, and I think I read something about Phil Jackson. One of the things that stood out the most is, his comment. He said that teamwork like love is ephemeral.
It is.
But the quarterback, I would probably, that gets too much credit or too much blame. I don't know. I know they get a lot of blame, the quarterback, and maybe not enough credit when the team does win. The coaching, you're an advice giver, you're an organizer, you're a planner, all contingencies, and I think just up close. I mean, and when it, coaches, I was around always. I mean, I was just, for whatever this is worth, I mean, I always seem to play better for coaches that I respected and coaches that I liked and were a good role model. And, you knew that they worked hard and they poured their heart and soul into it and respected them when I wanted to be like them, the way they were, their principles, their morals, their teaching ability. And, I liked being around them, I think probably a lot of that comes from that coach believed in me as a player. So those kind of finest qualities that I saw in coaches, starting with my dad, right off the bat, I mean, couldn't have a better example. Your dad, Tom Minnick, Bo Schembechler, Mike Ditka, Lindy Infante. I mean, those Al Davis, those, I was just trying to glean as much as I could from those men, and Ted Marchabrota, and, try to be like my dad, when it was all said and done.
Jim, I got to tell you, just as your friend, I hated seeing Ditka chew you out on the sidelines on television. Hated it. Maybe he knew what he was doing.
Oh, there's no doubt he knew what he's doing. And we had a very great player coach relationship. Mm-hmm. You talk about being starstruck by somebody.
yeah, he was big, wasn't he?
When I first went to the Bears, and I really liked him, you know, and he was such a great football player himself. And I always was around him and thinking, boy, I mean, if we were teammates, I mean, I would go to war for him and he would go for war, you know, go to war, would have your back if he was on your team. And I always felt like that as a player. But yeah, I mean, wasn't the first time I ever got yelled at by a coach or
no.
my dad, as you could recall, or your dad. There was
Howard Zucker
plenty of times.
Yeah.
And I always learned, you know, I always really took those to heart. And your dad taught me one of the great life lessons that, because he was always your dad. I was always sitting next to your dad every game in the dugout. He was such a enthusiastic man. I mean, attacked every day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind, as my dad would say. And he loved sports and competition, and he really liked me and believed in me and
loves you.
Would teach you. I did, and I loved him back, and and he loved me. And you know, it's just like we're breathing the same air. And there was a game we were playing over at Stone School. I'll never forget it. And there wasn't any fence
The wicked, nasty, rotten Stone School. Let me say that. That's for my Stone friends.
Yeah. But if you hit one in the gap, you know, playing 11-year-old baseball, and there was no fence, so that thing would hit the hard pack and roll, and you had a great chance of getting a home run by touching them all. And so I had hit one through the gap in left center, and it was going and rolling, and I was running, and they waved me in from third, and I'm just hauling. I knew it was going to be close, and slid. I don't think I dove. I slid and thought I was safe and was called out at home plate and was really mad about it, and went and sat next to your dad, and I said, I was safe. Yeah, it was close. It was close. You might have been out. And then, like, that same inning, somebody else on our team hit one just the same way and made an inside the park home run, and another play at the plate. And I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Zuckerman or one of those guys. And they called him safe. And I said to your dad, can you believe that? He's safe. And they called me out. He goes, you selfish. Yeah, that's a selfish teammate. What's the matter? It's the first time your dad ever turned on me. He just snapped on me. And I'll tell you what, I've remembered that my whole life, just ever since. Of, you know, it's not about you. It's about the team. It's about, you know, each other, and not playing sports for the, you know, for what's in it for you or your own personal glory, you know, raising yourself up and putting somebody else down. You know, it's about lifting others up and putting yourself down. That's how you be the best that you can be. But he taught me that lesson right there on the Stone School bench. And first time your dad's ever turned on me, he ever snapped at me, you know, it was a beautiful thing. That's coaching, you know, that's teaching.
Well, Jim, I got a couple more for you here at the end. I know you're on a schedule. I was thinking about John Beilein, the basketball coach, who had a long, illustrious college coaching career. Then he went to the Cleveland Cavs, and they canned him pretty early. I think it was unfair myself, but I'm no great analyst, and I'm a Beilein fan. And I was thinking, Jim, that you've coached college kids successfully. And you've coached multi-millionaires. And what's that like? Or is coaching simply coaching? And you forget who they are, whether they're, you know, 20-year-olds or 28-year-old future Hall of Famers.
It's really not that much different. There's really
interesting.
So many similarities, you know, to both. Definitely, you know, college is, there's, they're not, you know, they're not ready to take care of their own family, be the head of their own household. I mean, they definitely, you know, still need advice, and you can be, you know, that person in their life, you know, you know, their favorite coach, their favorite teacher. You know, by the time guys get to pro ball, you know, they've probably already had their favorite coach or their favorite teacher up to that point. And they are ready to be, I mean, they're grown men. They're ready to be head of their own household. But that's really the only difference. I mean, there's so many more similarities. I mean, it's still like being on a ball team. It's still building a ball team. It's trying to build your favorite ball team that you were ever on, and whether that's as a player or a coach. I mean, that's what you're striving for, to, you know, to build that team, the team, as Bo Schembechler would say, trying to make it like your favorite, you know, little league ball team that you were on. I mean, that's what you're striving for.
Jim, a few months ago, I did a podcast.
And I'm a huge John Beilein fan. You brought up John Beilein. Huge. I'm a huge John and Kathy Beilein fan. They are they're tremendous, tremendous people. And John is a fantastic, tremendous coach. I mean, and I've seen some great basketball coaches. Been up close, you know, watching my brother-in-law Tom Crean coach basketball, and met Bill Self and Tara Vanderveer. I mean, and pretty good at, you know, even knowing what good basketball coaches are and great basketball coaches. John Beilein's a great basketball coach.
Jim, you spent a lot of time around young people. I did this podcast with Mitch Daniels, the president of Purdue University, a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And former governor of Indiana. And I said, you like being around young people? He said, that's why I'm here. And he also said that they gave him hope for the future. He was around a lot of good young people. You have a little perch from which to view society. I mean, you see college students, maybe a particular type, but there are different types in football too. You see them every day in new classes. And do you like what you see? Just in general?
I really do. I really do. They're so, I feel young. I mean, that's
yeah.
I mean, selfishly, I mean, you're around young people all the time, whether it's, you know, my young kids or, you know, the football players, which I miss so much right now. I miss the team being together and practicing, and the coaches and, you know, the managers. I mean, everybody being around and working toward a goal, and, you know, just their company, you know, just being, they're fun, you know, it's a hilarious and good guys, being around them every day. That's been different. I miss them, but, I think a real fact of our world. I mean, you go back to, I mean, I think the Greeks wrote about it, 1800 years ago or 2000 years ago, that, you know, there's evidence that the next generation will be the ruination of society. And probably pretty much every generation since then has said, well, this next generation will be the ruination of society. And, you know, we have no chance, you know, but since those times, I mean, you know, you're looking at people, you know, more, I mean, living longer, you know, never had a more, you know, better situation in terms of economics. I mean, it's gotten better and better. Medicine, everything, you know, seems like it's technology. Everything has gotten better every generation. So I kind of see the same thing transpiring now, and more so too. You know, I think this group, this younger generation, those in their teens and early 20s and their 20s, they seem more about like the world as a whole, and think less about, you know, themselves and more about you know, the planet and the environment and others. I mean, I have to honestly say much more than those of us that grew up in the 80s, you know, that area of, you know, that decade seems marked more by, you know, individualism. So that's one thing I see. And, you know, even now, it's, as we all go through what we're going through now with the COVID-19, I see people more concerned about others and more prayerful. As I said, God has virtually stopped the world from spinning, and I don't think it's a coincidence. My personal feeling, living a faith-based life, is, you know, this is a message, or this is something that's, you know, that should be a time where we grow in our faith in reverence for and respect for God. You see people taking more of a view of sanctity of life. And I hope that can continue. I hope it continues, and not just in this time of crisis or pandemic, but, and lastly, you know, abortion. You know, we talk about sanctity of life, and yet we live in a society that aborts babies. I mean, there can't be anything more horrendous.
Indeed.
So.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've been hearing from Jim Harbaugh, a quarterback and coach. I'm Jay Nordlinger with Q&A. Our producer is Scott Immergut. Our sponsor is Quip, getquip.com/QA. Jim, what a pleasure to talk to you.
You too, Jay. Great catching up.
Till next time, my friend, keep that arm loose.
Appreciate your friendship. Appreciate your support. And so proud of you. We all are back here in Ann Arbor that knew you when you grew up. And my parents, I mean, they're so proud. They bore the heck out of the neighbors with your articles and your viewpoints. And they listen to you, and they read, and they share the articles with me. And forever proud of you, my friend.
Right back at you, babe. See you later.
As your dad would say. All right, babe.
Bye-bye.
Ricochet. Join the conversation.